I'm Emma Jones. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Making Your Research Here. So today we are going to talk about research for the next 30 minutes. We have the lovely Veronica Garcia from the Education Department. Do you like to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yes, well, first, thank you for inviting me.
No problem.
Yes, I'm Veronica Garcia. I'm doing research in the education and the Department of Education. And what else should I say?
Not really. That's pretty much about it. For the next 30 minutes, I'm going to ask Garcia a few questions related to her research, her life as a researcher at the moment now, and what actually is exciting about the research and why she started doing this. So, first question, your research. Would you like to introduce a bit about your research to the listeners, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, I work with second language learning, so it's basically my whole research is about second language acquisition. It taps a little bit into psycholinguistics as well,
mm-hmm.
and it also taps into applied linguistics, so it's kind of like a broad area.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I research second language word learning, so how second language speakers learn different words.
Mm.
And we correlate all that with cognitive factors, such as phonological working memory, verbal mm-hmm. intelligence, vocabulary size. So mm-hmm. what we want to do is like to understand some cognitive factors that influence second language learning and mm-hmm. specifically the learning of words.
Right. I understand you started doing the research about reading and you switched the two word learning. Why?
Yes, in a way.
Yeah.
I've always been fascinated with reading. And so when I first started thinking of doing the PhD, I thought I wanted to do something with reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still doing that because all my research is about reading in context. So how people learn words while reading. But the focus of the research has changed a little bit because I found out that we actually need more information on cognitive factors in second language learning.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know a lot about cognitive abilities and language learning in first language, but not as much in second language learning. So I decided to start researching
on
that.
It's always a mystery, isn't it? The second language, it's like the second sun. It just suddenly becomes important when you start learning a language. You're just like, okay, you speak another language. Great.
Exactly. So there is still lots that we don't know. So I thought, I'm going to give it a go. Why not?
I know. It's so interesting. Like when we talk about these research questions, you think, wow, this is so important. Everybody's learning a second language. It must be known. Then not really.
But not really.
Not
yes,
really.
Exactly.
I know. It's really interesting. All right. Is this research somehow related to your previous work experience or your educational backgrounds, or does it just sprout into your mind?
It is very related. It's extremely linked to what I've been doing for the last 15 years so. Yes. I did my BA mm-hmm. in TESOL, which is the teaching of English.
Yes.
I'm a second language learner myself, so of course that's all very related to me. And then I did a research degree back home in language learning as well.
Marvelous.
And then I moved to English Lit for a while.
Oh, right.
So everything related to reading one way or another in English.
Yeah.
So yes, it's very linked to my academic background. And then I worked as an English teacher for 5 years back in my home country, which is Costa Rica. And then also realized that, certain little things that my students were going through. And then I thought, this kind of very interesting to also do research on this. So all that, if I put all that together, that's how I ended up doing my PhD.
Well, you look like 20 years old. Have you started doing your PhD like around 5?
Well, that's such a compliment. Thank you very much.
You started at 8. Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. So basically, you were in the field of empirically investigating already before you started your PhD. You were always involved.
Yes.
This kind of thing.
Yes, I was. Yeah, absolutely.
That's very interesting. Yeah. That's very great. Who's your supervisor at the moment? Is it
my supervisor is called Leah Roberts.
Yes.
But I'm also co-supervised by Saoirse Bolivo.
Mm.
Sorry.
Yeah, both of them are very good people.
Yeah, extremely
very
talented
nice.
Women. Yeah.
I know. When we look at them, we just think, oh God.
I wish I would be like that one day.
I know. Sucha looks like 25 as well.
I know.
You'll be like, oh gosh, what do they do? Do they feed off knowledge?
Probably.
Probably. That's why we do PhD now. Right. So why do you think that, like you said, not much is known about second language learning, and even less is known about word learning, I suppose?
Well, the second language acquisition field is very big. It has been widely researched for the last 20, 25 years.
Yes.
However, how certain cognitive factors influence or not second language learning is what is still not so researched at the moment. So, and if we take into account cognitive factors and word processing, it is still less researched. So,
very interesting. Cognitive factors, do you mean, memories?
Yes, I work with phonological working memory.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, there is something that we all know, I suppose, that is called working memory.
Yes.
And it has different devices.
Yes.
One of them is called the phonological loop.
Yes.
And what it does is it stores all verbal intelligence and all sounds that we perceive.
Very nice.
And it is very, very linked to language learning.
Yes.
And specifically to vocabulary learning.
Yes.
So what we're doing is like we test participants, we get, let's say, into their phonological loop.
Yes.
We see what the storage it is, or how much they can store it in a certain times. And what we do is like we correlate all that with word learning. So
we'll
see if that has an effect or not in the learning process.
How do you measure them then, the loop?
So there are lots of different tests.
Yes.
But what we did for this research, my target participants are Spanish speakers who are learning English as a second language.
Right.
And we used something that is called a known word Spanish repetition task.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so they're made up Spanish words, because if you ask someone to repeat, it's all about repetition.
Yes.
If you ask someone to repeat a word they already know, the reaction time is going to be milliseconds.
Oh yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So we're asking them to repeat words they actually have never heard before.
And you test how long they can go, basically.
Yes.
How long the made-up word is.
Exactly. So we start with two-syllable words until eight-syllable words.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Then we analyze their storage.
Anybody got 2 8-syllable words?
Well, I finished collecting data half an hour ago.
Oh my god,
so
congratulations!
Very excited, a very happy moment. So I haven't analyzed the data yet, but I'm going to start tomorrow.
I know, we look forward to reading the paper based on
that
one.
Thank you.
That's very interesting. Aren't many 8-syllable words even in English, are there?
Eight-syllable words, I don't think so.
The most I can come up with, probably something from Harry Potter, that they have a lot of syllable words.
Well, maybe some compound words.
Yeah.
Like high visibility, or
the chemical ones.
Yeah, those compound words, let's say, probably.
They probably have like 16 different syllables. That's very interesting. So you got that's one of the measures that you're going to use. Oh, you've already used.
Yes, so that's one of the cognitive factors we're looking at. And then we're also looking at verbal intelligence and vocabulary size.
Mm-hmm.
Because theory says they are predictors of word learning, but we still want to make sure if that actually is true for word learning.
All right. So you are looking at vocabulary size while examining how people learn words.
Well, in a way. Mm. What my participants did is like they came on day one and they took all the battery of individual differences, which was also vocabulary size, as you mentioned.
Yes.
So what we measure is their receptive vocabulary size in English. And then on day two, we test them. So it's just a measure.
Yeah, to kind of
correlate it with their learning.
And make sure they are of similar levels, I'd imagine.
Well, what all participants have very, very similar English level.
Oh, right. Okay.
But the vocabulary sizes varies.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Oh, that sounds great.
Oh, thank you.
How are you going to, any idea, how are you going to use your data for analysis? Are you going to do them in what kind of environment?
Well, my studies are experimental studies, so hopefully tomorrow I'm going to start my statistical analysis.
Oh,
so I'm going to use
so
this package that is called R.
Yes.
So we're going to analyze it with R. But the eye tracking data, because I'm doing, I don't know if I mentioned it already, but I'm doing eye tracking as well.
Nope.
I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that.
No, that's very cool.
So, so we test all this word learning. There are four different stages when you're learning a word. One is called recognition, another one is recall, the next one is called prediction, and the last one is integration.
Right.
So we tested two last ones, prediction and integration, with online methodologies.
Right.
And with this particular study with eye tracking. So the eye tracking data actually looks a little bit different. So what we do is we analyze, for the prediction, we analyze participants' eye movements. Mm-hmm. If they look at the objects that we want them to look at, let's say. And then we also analyze for how many milliseconds participants actually look at a specific words.
Uh-huh.
And also if the eyes do regressions.
Yes.
So for example, when you're reading a sentence, we look at the movement of the eye and we want to see if the eye goes back. And that's a second reading of a specific words. And if the eye does so, we analyze for how many milliseconds they did it. So all that gives us a lot of different data to analyze.
Yes. Good for you.
Thank you.
I know that sounds like a hell of a thing to analysis.
Oh yes, it's going to be a lot of work.
I know. There's no problem you're going to write 85,000 words. That's,
I don't know how I'm going to do that, but hopefully I will.
I know. When you are in the third year, all you can think about is, God, I need to write 80,000.
80 or 85,000 words. It's like 400 pages.
I know.
So it's a book, basically.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They're asking us to write a book in order to be able to graduate.
And I don't even want to read that book that I write. It's like, that's it. Done. Bye.
But hopefully I'll be able to write at least 80,000 words.
Yeah. That's the minimum, isn't it?
It is. In our department, it is.
I think so. I think in electronics or something, they do pages. I'm like, oh gosh, you can do that.
Yeah, but no, we have to write.
I know.
A very big number of words.
It's literally writing a book. It's so horrible. Oh well. And then that would be the last biggest piece we were ever writing.
I guess
probably,
so, because in the future, well, I would like to be, a researcher, a proper researcher, let's say, in the future. You just write papers and they're not 80,000 words.
No, we're not ever going to write 85,000 words ever again. Who
for the same project, probably not.
I know. Who is going to review that for the editors? I really feel bad for them.
No, that is not going to happen.
I know. Well, I think about external examiners, like for anyone who's not very familiar for the PhD process in UK education. I think it's mostly UK higher education institutions. We have external examiners coming to examine the work. They have to read all these 85,000 words. I really bless them. And
they quiz you about it.
They have like super person memory. Literally, they remember everything and go like, in page 142, you mentioned this. I'm like... Did I?
I don't know how they do it.
I know, unbelievable. See, that's a proper researcher. That's what we aim to be in the future. So you said you're going to, you look forward to work in the academia.
Yes.
You're actually the first person on this show who wanted to work in academia.
Oh, really?
I know. We have so not that much competition right there. I know. Just you. Right. Which field or... any specific areas that you would be interested in?
Yes, I want to continue. I would like to continue with second language acquisition. I think that's what I'm going to be doing. I would love to work with prediction. So how actually we are able to predict using our second language. And definitely with the cognitive factors. Because as I mentioned, actually there's a big gap in the literature. Because there are not many studies looking at the cognitive load or specific cognitive factors in word learning, in second language word learning. So I would like to continue with that. And hopefully, I want to continue with psycholinguistic methods. So still with the use of eye tracking and hopefully fMRI in the future as well.
Oh yeah, that 700. And that one in psychology department, I think they just broke.
Yeah, it's a little bit... you have to be very careful. It's very, they're very expensive.
I know. When you're around them, you're like, you're around, I don't know, the prime minister. You can't say anything or do anything wrong. You'll be like, oh,
yes,
God.
Yes, and it's very expensive, but it's very accurate. So it's fantastic to do research.
I know. What do people do before the modern days of high-end technology? I have no idea.
Well, when you look at encyclopedias, they're just like somehow... It's just theory over theory, in our field at least.
Just words after words, yes, of one's arguments and imagination. I feel really bad for them. Mm. Oh, that's very interesting, because I was thinking, if I continue down my path, so I'd probably be doing assessment and testing as well, which is a big field for cognitive factors.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's a... area of exploration. That's very interesting.
Well, no, yeah, there is a lot that's still to be done when we talk about second language acquisition and cognitive factors.
Yeah.
So, well, there's lots of work to do then.
I know, yeah. God bless, we're not going to write 85,000 words again.
But hopefully not.
I know, yeah. Have you been doing anything else than your PhD along the side? I know you're very good with sports.
I don't mean, like, what do I do besides my PhD?
Yes. Yes, life-wise.
Yeah, there is life sometimes. During my first year, I played chess quite a lot.
Oh, my God.
I played for the university's chess team in various tournaments in Yorkshire and outside Yorkshire as well. But then, on my second year, I didn't have as much time. No. So I didn't do any chess, but I've been... doing some running lately.
Great.
So
yes.
I'm trying to work on that. And yes, I love doing sport. So I go to the gym like 4 times per week and I go running.
I know,
and
that,
it's just very good also for my mental health. So
oh yeah, you need to get out and really just stop sitting in front of the computer.
Yes, exactly. Because otherwise I'm thinking of my PhD every day, every time, you know, like all day long. So this I need to do something in order to stop my brain thinking about the PhD.
I know. This is so different from any other kind of job. You don't turn off.
You don't at all. And I guess when you submit your thesis, still you're thinking of your viva and what the external examiners are going to say. And then if, depending on the type of corrections you get, you still have to work on your corrections.
I know.
So I think this is kind of like a never... ending process.
I know. Then when you become an academia, a proper researcher, it's kind of like the same process again. You submit your paper, you wait for the review.
You make the corrections, you have to submit again.
I know. When they say, sorry, you're like, oh.
But one of the good things about this, you know, about doing a PhD, is that actually, your job is to study.
Yeah.
So every day you have the chance to study.
Yeah.
And you have as many hours as you would like to.
Yeah.
To do that, to research, to create, to come up with ideas. And I think that's absolutely fascinating.
I know.
It's very tiresome. I've been tired for the last 2 years and a half. You know, like,
oh my God, yeah.
I'm always exhausted. There's so much to do. But still, it's amazing.
I know.
It's like, well, my job's actually to study.
I know.
It's just like a dream come true.
I know. It's so... I think by the end of third year, you know whether you want to do this for the rest of the life. You just know. When you look at... I don't know. I'm really bad with grants proposal. But apart from that, I think everything else is quite interesting. It's very interesting.
No, it is. And I believe you have to be very passionate about your topic well. Because you have to stick to it for at least 3 years and a half.
Yeah.
So I think if you love the topic and... Yeah. You also need a little bit of self-discipline, because we don't have a proper schedule time.
Oh no,
you know,
not
it's not
at
like
all.
Nobody's expecting you at the office.
No.
Your supervisor is not there, you know,
no,
looking for you.
No, not at all.
So you can actually wake up at midday if you want to, start working at 6 p.m.
Yes.
You know, it's just like there is lots of flexibility, but at the same time, you have to be quite self-disciplined in order to manage all that time and to achieve.
It's very interesting because we don't really go to lectures anymore.
No.
And we don't really have like lots of workshops or seminars, but somehow we're busy every day.
I can't believe it. Yes, I'm always busy. My friends ask me, but what are you doing? Why are you busy
all
the time?
We're just busy. I know.
Yes, it's just like there's just so much to do.
Yeah, no, it's just like there is no turning off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Never.
Oh, I wish, but no.
Oh no, have you seen all the office in our on our campus? Everybody's lights are on. They're just there.
Yes.
Never leaving.
Never.
Always there, emailing you 11 o'clock at night.
But as I said, it's very busy, it's tiresome, it's time consuming, but you are creating and you are researching and you're learning every day.
I know.
And to me, that's just fantastic. It's brilliant.
I know.
So even though I'm so tired and I'm not, you know, sometimes I'm not, I'm just can only concentrate on my PhD. I'm not seeing my friends, etc. But I still love it.
Yeah, that's why we need PhD friends. Yes. We all concentrate on our own project and we understand each other fully what the life is like for them. Yeah, I know. It's very, very interesting. And are you satisfied? Are you kind of happy with what the university has to offer?
Yes, I'm very happy with, well, with our department. Mm-hmm. I'm from the Department of Education. And they have all the research equipment that I need.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a wonderful eye tracking laboratory. And recently, we just got an EEG lab as well. So we can do a little bit of neuroscience and second language learning.
So cool.
Yes. So cool. At the moment, I'm very pleased with the facilities I have here at the university.
I think the eye tracker came last year?
Was it 2 years?
Was Leah Roberts, wasn't it?
Yes, so Leah Roberts got a grant and she got the money for the eye tracking lab. But I don't know exactly when. I know that I started in 2014 and the lab was already there.
Ah.
So I don't know exactly.
Is
next to Leah's office.
Oh, is it really? Right.
It's in the Department of Education. The first floor is DM 110.
Oh right, okay. If anybody wants to have a look, is a £1 million machine, I'd imagine.
No, it's not
thousands of.
Yes, it's thousands.
Yeah, the fMRI is way more than millions.
I don't know exactly how much the fMRI cost, but I believe it's a very big amount.
Let's raise funds. Let's get us one. I think the department has really moved on quite a lot facility-wise.
Yes, it's fantastic.
The past 3 years. It's quite interesting.
It's very good at the moment. I think it's going to create something very positive if all these researchers actually use the labs.
I know. If anybody wants to come and do a neuroscience-related second language acquisition research, please come to York.
Yes.
We're advertising now. Please come to York and follow Leah Roberts in future. They're very brilliant people.
Or you can follow me maybe in the future. Why not?
I know. We can collab. I can do cognitive studies and in testing and assessment and see how that affects. I'm sure there will be something. And I think for PhD, it's actually, if you can find arguments to back up that your project is important and worth investing, you can actually create a field of your own if you can find the theoretical framework.
Yes. I believe what we do is highly relevant for society and for language learning. And for example, what I'm doing, our findings can be used for teaching methodologies. It can be used in schools, in higher education, in language institutes. It can also, for example, for academics, we are trying to generate theory out of this, we're trying to move the field forwards in a way. So there's lots of very positive outcomes out of this. So it's just a matter of finding the funding.
No,
and getting the grant.
I know. We're leaving EU now, so we're on our own.
See how much money the UK is going to have for research.
I know. Let's talk to China. Let's borrow money from my country. That'd be nice. Right. Is there anything that you like to improve social-wise and academic-wise for University of York researchers? Anything you think that could be better?
Well, for us, I think what will be better is we have a lot of study spaces, but I still believe that we need more.
Yeah.
We need more study spaces and we need more laptops and desktops.
Yes.
Because we basically have to bring our own. So some of my colleagues, for example, they have to carry their laptops every day, and most of them cycle, and so I believe that's not as comfortable as other institutions. So other colleagues from other institutions, they have their office with their own computers just ready for them to work with, and I believe that could be very good for us.
And I suppose it's safer as well for data protection and everything.
Of course. I mean, if we have our data actually you cannot have your data only one place, because that's just makes no sense.
I know,
you need to back it up in as many places as possible. But if you main computer, let's say, is at uni.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be very positive. And I don't think that's the case at the moment, at least in our department.
And until we get hacked by ransomware software and everything's doomed. Million pounds to get your data back. Yes, I'll pay. In a second. Yeah. Right. That's very interesting. Any word of wisdom for listeners who will be applying for PhD research?
Well, if you want to do a PhD, if you're thinking about it, my advice is do it.
Yeah.
Just stop thinking about it and submit your proposal. It's absolutely fantastic to do a PhD. It's, to me, it's fascinating. It can be quite isolating, though, because nobody else is working on your topic. Some colleagues may be doing something similar, but nobody's actually doing what you're doing. So it's you and your supervisor.
Sometimes they don't know.
Sometimes they're not.
No,
experts on the field. So it could be quite isolating, but it's really good. It's brilliant. You're being paid to study, really.
I know, it's so rare. It's like you have the opportunity. Do you want to do this? Yes.
And also, I think we have to be very patient.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm kind of like panic and I want my data to be analyzed right now, and I want, to have my first chapters already made and done and revised, and it just doesn't work like that.
No.
We have to be very patient, and that's something that I lack. I think sometimes I'm like kind of, oh, I want my PhD to be done. So if you're thinking of doing a PhD, submit your proposal, do it, it's fantastic. And find a topic that you absolutely love, because you're going to be with that topic for at least 3.5 years. You have to stick to it. So research on something that you think is worth it, that you love, and go for it.
I think the topic that you're going to investing is kind of like your partner as well. You definitely spend more time with that one topic than any other person on planet Earth. You can't, probably you won't think about them 24/7, but you think about a research topic 24/7 anyway.
Oh yes, I'm thinking of my research basically all the time. And sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't done this. Or why haven't I done this or that? So it's just like, even when you're sleeping, you're thinking about it.
That's so horrible. That sounds like we don't have a life. We do.
Yes. Sometimes.
It's just our life is full with research. This is so interesting. I know. Every time you have a guest on the show, they describe this research, and you can feel it's very singular experience to them. And the good thing about it is by the end of the third year, you kind of know where you will be. It's either in academia or not.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
I have some colleagues who have said, I'm not doing this for the rest of my life. I just want to graduate and then find a job somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine.
Oh, yeah.
Because academia is not suitable for everyone.
No.
But if you like it, I think it's really, really fascinating.
I know. It's all about the project. And communicate with your supervisor before you actually get accepted and know what they are doing and what they are like.
Yes, and
it's very important.
And I believe communication with your supervisor is key.
Yeah.
And if you're in good terms, that really will help your PhD process.
Yeah, yeah. Unless they're moody like mine. I don't think she's listening, so it's fine. Mine's famous for being moody, so. Anyway, very nice to have you here on the show. How can our listeners, if they're interested in your research, how can they find you?
Well, they can contact me through the Department of Education.
Yes.
And my office is based in the Berwick's old building, second floor. Mm-hmm. It's the Institute for Effective Education. So I basically live there. So
24/7, yes.
So you can contact me through the department or just come to Berwick's old building, second floor, and we can have a wonderful chat about it.
Marvellous. If there are neuroscientists who want to work with second language acquisition, please find Veronica. She's brilliant. Right. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you so much for being on the show.
No, thank you very much for the invitation. I truly enjoyed it.
No problem. Okay. Thank you. We'll see you next week.